The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
And tame again.
Crank up the music! Charge a glass! This nation is going to dance all night!
A highly dubious new entry in the Premier League pantheon of tough places to go. Physios wearing predators, yes or no? How many shots on goal constitute a peppering? Are Wolves the most they'll be fine team ever? The mundane deadline day deals that just sound so right. And which very niche Premier League table has Jurgen Klopp sitting not so proudly at the top? Brought to your ears by The Athletic, this is Football Clichés. Right now you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £3.49 a month. That's 30% off the full price of a subscription. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all of our podcasts. So go to theathletic.com/clichéspod to take advantage of this special discount. That's theathletic.com/clichéspod. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 90 of the Football Clichés podcast. I'm Adam Hurry and with me first of all is David Walker. Now I'm speaking to you in the midst of transfer deadline day, of course. We've got a big name deal that we were hoping to push over the line, but it looks like we're going to have to wait until the January transfer window to complete. I don't want to name any names, but this is an exciting one for us, isn't it? I just hope that he's still globally relevant in January, that's all.
Yeah, this is a big deal. And in a way, I think, again, without being able to reveal the name of this particular transfer target, we hope that he isn't globally relevant in January, actually. It'd be quite nice if he dropped off the radar for the good of humanity.
For the greater good.
And all will become clear. Perhaps we should tip off David Ornstein after this, just to give him a heads up.
He'd be so excited with that news. As we were recording this podcast, as we settled down to record this, I was watching the Athletic's live transfer deadline day stream, and I cut it off just as host Adam Leventhal was asking Newcastle reporter Chris Woff whether they're going to get any fresh bodies through the door at Newcastle. Dave, Newcastle are the ultimate bodies through the door club as it stands, aren't they?
100%, yeah. Yeah, and I think Steve Bruce is probably the most bodies through the door Premier League manager at the moment.
Definitely, yeah. When you're getting bodies through the door as your transfer strategy, that implies that things are not going well for the medium and long term for you.
Inanimate bodies.
Still do a job for you. They could do the little line down but under behind the wall at a free kick, so not completely useless. Hard to get them to sign the deal, though. Speaking of fresh bodies and fresh faces, here's a man with both. It's Nick Miller. How you doing?
I'm very well. What a body, what a face. I'm glad you brought up faces because they're fresh faces. New bodies and fresh faces, is that what we're going with, do you think?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be new bodies, just bodies at all. Just bodies, but yeah, fresh faces. Yeah, the implication that you're refreshing your squad, whereas bodies are simply making up the numbers. It's it's very, very clear-cut hierarchy there. Yeah. Question for you. I was at a festival on Bank Holiday Monday, and I saw what I thought at that very moment, although he soon disappeared, a man wearing the most Barclays-era football shirt imaginable. Would you like to take a guess what that may have been?
Well, my immediate thought was kind of Evan Campo wearing a Bolton.
That's a good shout. Dave, would you like to guess?
For me, Barclays-era, I just immediately think of Martin O'Neill's Aston Villa with Young and Heskey and Agbonlahor and Carew. So I don't know who their sponsor was at the time, but an Aston Villa from that time?
Rover, maybe? Mm. Rover?
Or Acorn?
Acorn was a little bit later.
Yeah. Admittedly, very good shout, and arguably perhaps more Barclays than the real answer. The real answer was Tottenham 0506 with Thompson Holidays and the blue sleeves.
Oh, that is nice.
Sort of Kappa.
The shirt with they wore in the lasagna game.
I think so. Yeah. I think it was, yeah. If he'd still been there when I returned from the toilets, I really wanted to go over to him and just say, you're the quintessence of Barclays, congratulations. He wasn't there, so we just don't know how that interaction would have turned out. I'd like to think he would have taken it in good humour. Anyway, you're both here to make up the adjudication panel this week, and it is a bumper one. With a sprinkling of transfer chat, but other things to get stuck into. Nick, give me off the top of your head a list of the archetypes title, tough Premier League places to go over the last 20 years or so. What are the obvious things that come to your head?
Well, Burnley is always a tough place to go. Stoke, obviously.
Yeah.
Where else? I mean, generally, it's sort of it kind of used as a sort of backhanded compliment to maybe newly promoted teams. So Hull feels like a kind of tough place to go.
Yeah,
maybe Swansea. No, that's not. Actually, no, that's nonsense. No, that wasn't a tough place. It's a nice place
to get the ball down and play.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. That's just a difficult place to go, like logistically. That's different. Although it is a part of it, I have to confess. Anyway, yes, the pantheon of tough Premier League places to go is well established, to the point of going almost beyond cliche. But Dave, we're about to listen to a clip from last weekend where I think the Premier League tough place to go discourse plunged new depths. Here's Brendan Rodgers.
A 3 o'clock kickoff at Carrow Road with the sun shining is always a difficult game to come to. But now we show great results. Resilience, especially towards the end.
Dave, before we get into the real detail of this, it's just complete bollocks, isn't it? It's the most condescending, you know, setting out your excuses early piece of rubbish I've ever heard.
Absolute nonsense. And you know what? I think he knows it. I think there was a slight Lampardian shift, wasn't there? Because he started off all smiles and then he sort of went, oh, actually, I probably shouldn't have. I've taken the piss a bit there. And he sort of furrowed his brow and thought, no, and, you know, seriously, no, it was, you know, difficult game. But similarly to Swansea, Nick, as you just said, it's a lovely place to go. Why has he mentioned the sunshine? That makes it easier, surely, wherever it is. I'd rather play the sunshine at Turf Moor than in the rain at Turf Moor.
The sunshine is only makes it difficult for one person, and then there's a goalkeeper without a cap. Other than that, the sunshine just makes it wonderful for everyone, surely.
I want to try and work out how deep the implication goes, Dave, because the only suggestion I can sense is that, what, he's implying that people from Norwich like working outdoors a lot, so they're probably more acclimatised to, you know, weekend work in the sunshine? Not sure. Not sure, but I still can't. In summary, I mean, let's not get away from it. It's an absolutely absurd thing to say, but it is also a very good example of being able to say anything in a Match of the Day interview and get away with it.
Yeah, it's ludicrous. Yeah. Completely ludicrous. Yeah. Right now, if you went to every Premier League manager and said, you can have any game you like, Saturday 3 p.m. next week, you can play anyone. It's going to be sunny day. It's going to be 3 o'clock. Pick any team. I bet you they'd all pick Norwich. Yeah. Even Norwich would pick Norwich.
The crowd are on top of you a little bit, aren't they?
They're not hostile, though, are they? They sing a song. They sing a bloody mad old song from the 1800s.
On top of you in a sort of friendly, maybe give you a little bit of a cuddle if you miss a chance sort of way, rather than a sort of spittle-flecked abuse thrown at you kind of way. No, not having it.
Okay, I think we've firmly debunked that one anyway, but lovely stuff from Brendan Rodgers nonetheless. Next up, a delightful favourite little genre of mine, Nick, which is the occasionally interesting replies people once received to letters they sent to football managers, which pops up on Twitter sort of occasionally. And the template is usually kind of textbook level nice touches, skirting just the right side of massively condescending. So, you know, thanks for sending me this letter, and the value is simply in the reply itself, almost regardless of what the words are. And, you know, he took the time to reply. So Clough would have done it back in the day and that sort of stuff. So the template is well established. It's always very, very nice touch. Until now, Manchester City fan Simon Curtis posted this at the weekend. He says, nice piece of MCFC memorabilia. Letter dated 1985 from manager Billy McNeil to my mate and then Haarlem, Netherlands resident Johnny Waters after he tipped City off about Haarlem's young striker Ruud Gullit. Gullit went to PSV instead, then world fame with Milan. City were relegated. So he set the scene here. This is the reply, Nick, that he received from Billy McNeil. Dear Johnny, thank you for your letter and recommendation. I will most certainly take your advice and, quote, have a good look at Ruud Gullit. Although I must add that I do know quite a lot about the lad already. Again, thank you for taking the time and trouble to write to me. It was most appreciated. That is the most withering reply I've ever seen.
Also, absolute bollocks. He has been caught out there. He's not. There's a young, up-and-coming player that he hasn't heard of. And, you know, this was the mid-80s that we don't have Y Scout and the extended scouting networks that we do now. He quite reasonably not have been aware of a young up-and-coming player in the Netherlands. But he's been caught with his pants down there and he's tried to style it out.
Well, that makes it all the more disgraceful. Of course you don't know who the bloody Ruud Gullit is, and it's okay not to know who he is in 1985 and he's playing for Haarlem in the Netherlands. Yeah. Like, just say, oh, thanks very much. I'll send someone over.
That would have been the nicest touch.
Is Billy McNeil a sort of proto internet football hipster from around sort of 2010 who you mention a player and go, actually, yeah, I've been watching them since they played in the under 16s for.
I've had the Betamax sent over.
Yeah, exactly.
Surreal as the idea of Ruud Gullit turning out for Manchester City in the mid 80s was.
I do like it though. Because when I sort of saw it on the running order, I didn't properly take in the detail. I didn't realise it was from the mid-80s. And I just assumed this was like some kid who'd been playing like a proto version of Football Manager on an Amiga or something. But it's a real... He's actually been to... It's that genuine scouting report, you know, which
very
much proved to be bang on the money. So I like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if anyone's got any even more condescending replies from managers in letters typed out on a typewriter and sent in the mid-80s, please send them in and we'll read them out. Quick one for you next, Nick. Walton Yair alerts us to a potential, albeit mild, games gone moment, of which we were always on red alert for. He noticed during the bruising encounter between Leeds and Burnley at the weekend that the Leeds physio was wearing Predators. Properly studded Predators.
Wonderful.
I mean, is that games gone?
I don't know if it's games gone. It's sort of, I would describe
gold
that as...
Golden white as well.
Sort of endearingly... that might have changed something. I regard that as sort of endearingly childlike. The sort of, I think we may have discussed it on this podcast before, the sort of faint idea I had when I was 7 years old, when I went to games in full kit. And as my mother reminds me frequently, shin pads as well, with the sort of faint, presumably with the kind of faint hope that Brian Clough was going to, the right winger goes down and he points at the crowd and going, you boy.
If any manager was going to, it would have been Cloughy, wouldn't it? I suppose.
Yeah.
Just the sort of thing you can imagine somebody writing about in his biography. There was one time in a pre-season friendly and he pulled a young boy out of the crowd, played him at right back.
The kind of Clough story that turns out to be massively untrue.
I think the game's gone nature of this entirely hinges upon the colour of the boots. And are they modern Predators? Because if they were like retro Beckham 97 Predators, I think that's... I wouldn't mind that. But if it's like a pair of white ones or whatever, they're blades or they're the new style, you know, no-tongued, boots of no tongue.
Well, it was hard to tell on the footage exactly what incarnation of the Predator we were talking, but it looked mid-2010s at the latest. And they were white and gold. Right, but okay.
White and gold. Regardless of the brand of boot, if a physio is wearing white and gold boots, that is games gone. No doubt about it.
It felt like the boots with no tongue was your personal games gone threshold there, Dave. There was a venom with which you said boots with no tongue, which suggested that was your limit. That's
you know, maybe we need to take an all round approach to this, Nick. Why shouldn't a physio look good?
Exactly.
Why shouldn't a physio? It's Leeds Burnley. He's going to be running on a lot, and as it turns out, he was on the pitch a lot. So you're going to want to look your best.
Look good, feel good.
Yeah, and treat good. Walton, yeah, I see where you're coming from, but I'm happy to embrace physios stepping up their footwear. It shouldn't all be Copper Mundi. Our trainers should be allowed to express themselves. Next up, a very big question, Dave, from Conno93. Well worthy of a debate on this podcast. He says, how many shots on goal constitute a peppering and in what time frame?
It's a great question. Is the peppering analogy, does that come from putting pepper on your food?
yeah, sprinkling pepper. And then I guess it extended to gunshot, gunfire, didn't it?
Yeah.
Peppered with gunfire.
So the rat-a-tat-tat of a gun being fired from the trenches.
It's more the frequency rather than the sensation, though.
I don't think it quite translates because literally, like, you wouldn't be able to have that many shots in a really short space of time in a football match, and unless you had an extreme example of a goalmouth sort of comedy goalmouth scramble. I think,
although oddly enough, in that circumstance, they wouldn't say peppering. That's a weird thing. If you could have three shots in the space of a few seconds, they wouldn't say peppered. They wouldn't exactly.
Mm. So I think peppering. In this instance, I think you need an extended period, like 15 minutes at least.
Okay, 15,
and they're shooting sort of every passage of play sort of thing. If a team sort of ends up shooting every time they get the ball sort of thing, I think.
Five in 15 minutes? Five on-target efforts in 15 minutes?
Yeah.
Is that a good threshold to go for? Yeah.
I think it's also dependent on none of the shots going in as well.
Completely. The peppering stops as soon as the goal goes in. Completely. Yeah. Completely. I suppose we could debate the finer details of how much time and frequency. But let's put it in the landscape of attacking intent, Dave. I would put peppering somewhere on the spectrum between concerted spell of pressure, laying siege, and the opposition goal leading a charmed life. I think it sits somewhere in the middle of all of that. A peppering isn't. Peppering is more like foreplay rather than a complete ravaging, isn't it?
Where does taking pot shots fit into it?
More speculative, isn't it? So, you could take a pot shot from anywhere. Your team wouldn't necessarily have to be in the ascendancy.
That's kind of what I think sort of part of it is. It's just like getting the ball and shooting consistently, just shooting from everywhere because they think the keeper's dodgy or something.
Okay. Well, the best we could come up with Conno 93, with the best will in the world, is a shot every 3 minutes over the period of about 15, all on target. But it's more, as we say so often on this podcast, Nick, it's more of a vibe than necessarily a metric. Is that fair to say? Maybe peppering is where seasoned pros come from.
Nice.
Yeah. Good stuff. Next up, brutal stuff from Sky Sports, Nick. In their online report from Harrogate 1, Exeter 1, writes Max Saunders. The intro begins, 10-man Exeter drew 1-1 at Harrogate after midfielder Josh Key ended his 48-game goal drought.
Wow.
Okay, interesting. You think, ooh, wow, that's a long time he's gone without scoring. Turns out he's a 21-year-old right back.
Is this the damage that players like Trent Alexander-Arnold have done to the brand, where they're expected to contribute in the attacking third so much that you are goal shaming young players?
Goal shaming, nice.
It's not their job. It's not that you might as well kind of berate a striker for a long run of non-clean sheets. Non-clean sheets?
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, that's absolutely right. We should employ some sort of threshold here. You should be an attacking player or an attacking-minded player who should be at least expected to get to double figures for a season before you can start talking about goal droughts, Nick. Is that fair?
I don't actually think anyone other than a striker should be allowed to have a goal drought. Even a winger, I don't think it should be a goal drought, really. Not really.
Well, it's generally accepted, Dave, that if you are a midfielder of any attacking repute, it's useful for you to chip in with goals.
Yeah, but is it a drought?
So it becomes more remarkable if you don't contribute a goal over a extended period of time. So let's say someone like a Genie Wijnaldum, if he's not scoring for 40 games, that becomes a thing then, right?
Yeah, it might be a noted thing, but I wouldn't say it's a drought.
Okay. Yeah, because it's not a personal crisis, is basically what you're saying. It's just
you could do other things.
An anomaly.
In the team.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe drought should be strikers only. Let's be definitive, Nick. I think that's fair enough, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or right backs.
But you get into sort of tricky, sort of slightly fancy football sort of definitions of what constitutes a striker now. I mean, is Son Heung-min a striker?
Yeah, he could have a drought because he's one of the focal attacking points of the team.
What about Jack Grealish?
No.
Someone like Jack Grealish, debate about whether Manchester are going to play him
I don't think of him as a goal scorer.
Exactly, no. Yeah.
I don't really picture him scoring goals.
He'd have an assist drought.
That should be a thing. Like he needs to set up someone off his arse or something like that. That should become a thing. I mean, yeah, we're so serious about assists now. That's a very good point. Assist drought. I'm going to investigate that and see if that's a thing. But yeah, worrying scenes down at Exeter. Nick, perhaps we can put this one to bed early doors for this season. Are Wolves the most they'll be fine team in Premier League history as things stand? They've lost all three games 1-0 despite having 57 shots, boasting an XG of 5.06. Even taking the stats out of it, you look at Wolves and think, oh, what a terribly exciting counter-attacking team. Talent all over the place. They'll be fine, won't they?
They are the biggest they'll be fine team, mainly because Raul Jimenez is there and they think, oh no, he'll start scoring again soon, so they'll be fine. Raul Jimenez is almost a sort of he'll be fine strike and one. But so yeah, absolutely. Wolves, they'll be fine.
The key to this, Dave, is that you need to be a team who really aren't too gargantuan to be in this situation. Like you couldn't they'll be fine Arsenal, even now, because we know that they probably will be okay. It's almost not worth saying.
Right,
we know they're not going to get relegated despite the banter.
Mm. You can use they'll be fine, but you have to use very different intonation. So Wolves, it's, oh, they'll be fine. Arsenal, it's, I mean, they'll be fine, but, and then you go on from there, I think. Mm.
You can technically still fear for Arsenal, even if you don't think they're going to get relegated. So some grey areas there and some clear-cut cases, both sorted out. Fascinating looking transfer story popping out as we record, Dave. 17-year-old Mexican forward Santiago Munoz is set to sign for Newcastle.
What?
Santiago Munoz.
Hang on.
You couldn't script it.
What's going on?
This is something I feel like they just couldn't turn down. This is one of the first transfers I've ever heard where the social media unveiling video precedes the transfer itself.
Three volumes of the transfer unveiling video. Is it three? This feels like...
They won't be able to resist.
This is pretty niche, but a few years ago, Andy Thomas, who's a very good football writer, I think we probably all know, wrote a piece, a sort of satirical piece saying where it was... The premise was that he was an investigative reporter who had discovered that the transfer window had become sentient and transfers were just happening without anyone knowing. This feels like this is actually occurring.
It represents a huge dilemma, I think, Dave, for their social media team, because as a slam dunk of a piece of content it is, this player sharing 95% of his name with the lead character in the Goal trilogy, who signed for Newcastle in the first edition of that. He's only 17. He's going to go straight to an academy. They can't make too much of a fuss about it. So what are they going to do? What are they going to do? They could ruin him.
I think he's actually 19, according to my research. So he might have a chance of getting into the team. But
how long have you been recording?
But I mean, I just can't believe it. I'm absolutely staggered.
I often think if someone's looking for a house and they find somewhere that is... It's the perfect place. It's just the right size. They can afford it. But it's on something like Bum Lane or something like that. Do you...
Bum Lane.
Sorry.
Carry on, because I'm going to Google if Bum Lane exists.
But do you reject the house, which is perfect in every other possible way, because you don't want to say, my address is 19 Bum Lane? Would Newcastle scout a player like this, who is, as you say, his name is almost the same as the character from Goal, and then reject him on the basis that, oh, come on, we'll be a laughing stock here. I don't know.
There isn't a Bum Lane, but as previously documented on this podcast, Shepshire Dynamo play at the Dovecote Stadium, which exists on Butthole Lane.
There you go.
Or the flip side to your point, Nick, certainly not beyond the realms of possibility that somebody out there at a football club, particularly one with as banterous a history as Newcastle United, would actually go out and find this bloke and say, we've got to do it, haven't we? We've just got to do it. Think of the likes. Think of the numbers.
Kuno Becker's phone must be ringing off the hook. Not that I suspect he's terribly busy these days. Has he done anything else? No, he hasn't. So maybe he's a little bit more interested in him. But interested to see how that one turns out. It's got at least three films worth of material to get through to live up to. So big job for him. Continuing on a transfer theme, Dave, for all the shock and awe that was Lionel Messi to PSG and Cristiano Ronaldo returning to Manchester United, there have been some reassuring all is right with the universe deals that have peppered this window. I point you towards Reading's little spree, little Barclays-themed spree. They've signed Scott Dan, Junior Hoylett and Danny Drinkwater.
Ooh.
What are they aiming for? What are they going for?
That's
What's this push that they're going for?
Junior Hoylett, Scott Dan. Did Scott Dan play for QPR with you? I don't think he did he? But they, it all feels to me like they will have played with each other before, but they probably haven't come anywhere near it, to be fair, have they?
I think so. Hoylett in particular is very much playoff places push. Drinkwater, I'm not sure how that's going to work out. But Scott Dan, actually, quite a wise signing, actually. Nick, to give it his due.
This is also, particularly the Drinkwater signing has sparked quite a niche genre of internet football fans who think they are incredibly well-versed about the sort of financial rules of the game, getting absolutely outraged that Reading, who are under some form of transfer embargo, how could they possibly afford Danny Drinkwater's wages? And then someone else piles in and goes, well, actually, they're probably only paying a percentage of it. And it all kind of unravels into a sort of well-actually series of tedious arguments.
Elsewhere, Nick, Andre Gray to QPR. Absolute slam dunk, isn't it?
Yeah. One of those where you have to kind of Google it to just double check that he hasn't played for QPR before.
Dave, this one's very much up your street. I like this little combo. Moussa Sissoko to Watford. Huge Watford energy to Moussa Sissoko.
Very pleased about that.
But going in, going out the door, Will Hughes returning to Crystal Palace, as I like to think of it, for a third spell.
I'm just too annoyed at the fact that he's there. Fuck's sake.
He's in his spiritual home.
Our lovely Will. He's not Palace. No, he's too nice.
He's immensely Palace. He's way more Palace than Watford. It feels
like I need to kind of give the casting vote here. he's very Palace, I'm afraid.
Yes, just go, excellent stuff.
Also, just go briefly going back to Andre Gray. It's I don't know whether this is an existing genre or it's a part of a new genre. He signed for QPR, so he'll now be presumably playing up front with Charlie Austin, who I think he was bought to replace at Burnley, or that was certainly, nice. Which is kind of like one of those sort of specials of Doctor Who where they get all the doctors to sort of to exactly in the same room. I'm not going to look up whether Andre Gray actually was specifically signed to replace Charlie Austin at Burnley, because that'll ruin it. But in my head, it's true. So that's what counts.
Let's hope they dovetail, as they so clearly do on paper. Next up, David Ornstein exclusive this afternoon. I don't know how this will pan out by the time this podcast is released, but who cares? Saido Berahino is on the verge of a return to English football with an unnamed club before the transfer deadline. Now, such is the theme of this podcast, I'm less inclined to find out who that club is than I am to actually guess who the club is. So let's gamble on this. Who is the most Saido Berahino-y club in summer 2021?
Now, isn't it?
Are Reading allowed to sign him, Nick?
Well, actually, I think you'll find that... I don't know. I don't know whether this
They've done their money on Danny Drinkwater, of course.
I could see Warnock taking him, Middlesbrough.
Oh, yeah. And actually, no, you're exactly
arm around
right.
the shoulder. Yeah. He's a good lad. Yeah. I think I can get him back on track.
That is sensational. Yeah. That's exactly it. They're 13th in the Championship. Yeah, they're 13th in the Championship. They've scored 6 goals in 5 games. They clearly need some extra firepower. And Warnock with his arm around Berahino, in a figurative sense, it really does tick all the boxes. Thank you, Dave. That is perfect. Ozan Kabak, once of Liverpool loan fame, is joining Norwich, it seems. Fairly unremarkable, really, except for this stat from at NCFC Numbers, Norwich's number one Twitter data account. They say that Ozan Kabak has broken Norwich City's 87-year wait for a palindromic player since Joe Hannah played his final game for the club in 1934. Hashtag NCFC, hashtag welcome Kabak. Sensational stat.
Is that a drought?
And yeah,
it's a palindrome drought. I
mean, it's a drought and a long-awaited situation. It's good to have a palindromic player in your team, isn't it?
It's nice. It's a nice touch. I mean, I'm very impressed by NCFC Numbers there. That seems a little bit outside the wheelhouse of your usual statistical-based football Twitter account, but well done.
Well, if you've got a spreadsheet of every player who's ever played for Norwich, I suspect you've got to try and flex its muscles at some point. I don't know how Joe Hannah turned out. I imagine it started well, didn't go great, and then finished nicely. We talked about Arsenal briefly earlier, Nick, about the state of Arsenal. Their drubbing at the hands of Manchester City at the weekend was described in one outlet as an afternoon to forget for Mikel Arteta. And it got me thinking, in his short period as Arsenal manager, I suspect he's had a lot of days / afternoons / evenings / nights to forget, then it, perhaps more than any other manager at this stage of a career. So I went as far, and I'm putting NCFC Numbers to shame here, I went as far as to create a league table of all the current Premier League managers and how many hits on Google they get for to forget for name. Now, that's a watertight approach. It can't be. It couldn't be possibly misconstrued for any other situation.
You've actually done this?
Yes, I have actually done this.
I saw this on the running order. Just assumed that this was all some sort of farcical gag that you'd just gone through and just made it all up. But this is actually
nothing like this
true.
Is made up.
That's
no, I've done all this.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, I've done this on Google. Now I should clarify, it's not a precise science. Of course, the same day / afternoon / evening / night could appear more than once.
Right.
If the content becomes syndicated with other outlets. So I should make that clear. So that may muddy the league table somewhat.
Although, no, it's still quite a nice... It still sort of works, though, because it's sort of...
The widespread documentedness of that.
Night to forget, the more places that we'll talk about it.
With that caveat in mind, Nick, who do you think is top of our table for days / afternoons / evenings / nights to forget in their entire career?
Is this current Premier League managers?
Current Premier League managers of the current 20. Who has had the most times of day X to forget?
It almost feels too obvious. Steve Bruce?
Steve Bruce is 6th. Oh. Steve Bruce is hovering around the European places for times of day to forget with 1,170.
Well, that's about about 3.5 years, that? That he needs to just block out of his mind.
Increasingly difficult to forget that many games and that many nights. I'll give you the top three, actually. Jurgen Klopp sits proudly top with 1,922 times a day to forget, plus another 6 in German.
I know he's lost a few cup finals in his time, but...
Yeah, I think it may have just been one or two that have been just widely pronounced as such.
He had a bad time, that sort of season at Dortmund when it all went wrong. I think he was spectacularly... Yeah. imploded, didn't it? So maybe they will come from that.
Maybe that run of six home defeats last season has boosted his total artificially, because that was unsustainable. Expected Knights to forget run. Nick, second, perhaps surprisingly, is Patrick Vieira with 1,877. I can't think of a single Knight. I can't remember any of the Knights he's had to forget.
Is Knights to forget a accepted phrase in America? Because he would have been, maybe he had lots of Knights to forget there, I don't know.
Rafa Benitez rounds out the top three with 1,730. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, 1,360. Mikel Arteta is fifth, hovering just outside the Champions League places with 1,206. So it turns out he's not the manager with the most times a day to forget in his career. I fear I'm labouring this point. I want to find one more point of interest in here. Can you, between both of you, give me the three current Premier League managers who so far, according to Google, have never had a day, afternoon, evening or night to forget in their managerial careers? This is just below Graham Potter, who's had one.
I don't know. You'd instinctively say Guardiola, but he's lost a lot of...
1,090, sorry.
Yeah, a lot of big games there. Is this just going to be managers who aren't particularly famous, so they're not...
So it's got to be Cisco Munoz, right? And Watford.
Cisco Munoz has zero. So you're on the right line with these, very much so.
Who else? Ralph Hasenhüttl? No, hang on. He's lost 9-0 twice in the last...
Yeah.
He's only got two.
There you go. He's got two. It must have been one each. Fantastic. It does work. The system works. Fantastic news. Anyway, yeah, the bottom three is complete with Bruno Lage with zero and Thomas Frank.
He's lost the playoff final, Thomas Frank.
But is that an afternoon to forget? Because you're never going to forget that. Mm. You can never brush. I mean, if anything, you remember it. And you build on it, and you look back at it and go, well, we're never going to let this happen to us again.
Fair enough, yeah.
Yeah.
So are days / nights / afternoons to forget only just kind of run-of-the-mill league games then?
Yeah, I don't think there's much nuance to it. I think it could be any occasion. But I think more higher profile it is, the less likely they are perceived to forget it. On that note, producer AD says, you can bet your life that Arteta will not forget about any of these things. He will have been up all night watching that game 1 million times with a bunch of data nerds, and it will make no odds. The likes of Harry Redknapp would have taken the entire coaching staff and the wives for a slap-up meal in the West End, got hammered, and truly forgotten about it. It's true, Nick. You can't forget about anything in the era of video analysis. It's never going to be an afternoon to forget for Mikel Arteta, because he's going to have to watch it three times again then the following day.
And
the phrase is obsolete, is what I'm saying. So whenever you hear that phrase, please come to me and I will refer you to my league table, which I will keep updated.
What image comes to mind when you think of Harry Redknapp, the players and their wives having a slap-up meal in the West End? What is a slap-up meal? Where are they?
Where are they?
Are they?
It's not an Angus steak. It's not an Angus steakhouse, is it?
No, that's too low. Low end. Yeah.
Maybe that basement place in Soho. The kind of you go back and suddenly it's the 1920s in France.
Oh, Brasserie Zidel.
Yeah. Oh yes, yes, yeah.
Yeah. No, it definitely is that. Yeah.
Getting that platter of oddly undercooked meat. which looks nice on the menu. Then you get it and it's, oh, I wish I hadn't ordered that. So anyone who goes to Zidel, bear that one in mind. Nice service, though. Really do treat you like a king. Anyway, we finish, as we so often currently do, Nick, with Premier League Years Spotify Playlist Bingo. You know the drill by now. I want you to give me a number between 1 and 1,375, and we will talk very briefly about what we think that song pertains to in Premier League Years.
Now, am I allowed to be tactical again and use last week as a marker?
So yeah, I'm very much encouraged.
I'm going to go 131.
Oh, very close to your previous guess.
Yeah.
You're very much ensconced in the early years. What was it, 131?
Yeah.
That is no good. Start the Dance by The Prodigy.
Oh, that's strong. It wasn't quite the one I was aiming for, but I'm happy with that.
You're very much an early season, lots of action, lots of things to look forward to in this coming season in the Premier League kind of vibe to this. But yeah, a lovely mixed bag today. Thank you for all your questions and all your queries. They were very much in the spirit of Football Clichés. We wait with bated breath to see where Saido Berahino ends up. I hope it is indeed at Middlesbrough, as forecast by David Walker. And we'll be back next time with something equally exciting. Cheers to everyone. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.